Yesterday, I was sitting in a beanbag chair naked eating Cheetos. And I was flipping through the television there, and I saw Robert Tilton. He's a televangelist from Dallas, and he was staring at me. And he said, "Are you lonely?" "Yeah." He said, "Have you wasted half your life in bars pursuing sins of the flesh?"
"This guy's good."
He said, "Are you sitting in a beanbag chair naked eating Cheetos?" "Yes, sir." He said, "Do you feel the urge to get up and send me $1,000? "Close." I thought he was talking about me there for a second. Yeah, apparently I ain't the only cat on the block digs Cheetos.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Coming up next, hello, I'm calling from La Mafia. For bus owners in Honduras, making payments to gangs is routine. Extortion in Honduras is a way of life.
We go now to Honduras, which has the highest murder rate in the world. That means that jobs that are relatively safe here in the U.S., like driving a bus, can be incredibly dangerous in Honduras. More than 40 bus drivers were killed this year in the capital city, Tegucigalpa. As Marlon Bishop of NPR's Latino USA reports, it's all due to a terrifying business that thrives in Central America.
If you're a bus driver in Honduras, there's this thing that happens all the time. You'll be at an intersection and a kid will come, knock on your window, and hand you a cell phone.
Viene un niño, te deja un teléfono.
The owner of a bus company explained it to me, but we won't be using his name because of who is on the other end of that cell phone call. The voice on the phone will say, "Hi, I'm calling from such and such a gang. And if you want to keep driving this route, you have to pay me money every week, or else we will kill you." And it's not just like you pay this one gang and they protect you from the other gangs or anything like that. This bus owner is currently paying off 5 different gangs.
Cinco pandillas.
This kind of extortion has become a big business in Honduras. An entire sector of the economy, you could say. And to use your name when talking about this sector could get you killed. I met with an ex-gang member who told me how it all got started. He was a member of MS-13, or as it's known in Spanish...
Era la MS.
MS-13 was one of the first gangs to take off in Honduras in the 90s. He says back then, the gang would make money doing your typical gang stuff. They would go out and rob, steal cars, etc. Then, somebody in the gang has this brilliant idea.
Nosotros no nos vamos a arriesgar. Nosotros no vamos a robar.
Instead of going out and risking arrest, they could stay in their own neighborhoods and wait for the money to come rolling to their doorsteps on wheels. They could extort the bus companies. And this worked really well. The gang member I talked to says MS-13 had a monopoly on the extortion market for 6 years. But if you're running a successful business, eventually somebody else is going to start competing against you. And that's how we get to today, where a bus owner is paying 5 different gangs. Basically, all the fares collected on one day of the week go directly to extortion. The money gets collected, put into neatly marked envelopes, and sent off to various gangs. It's as routine as paying the power bill. In fact, they call it the rent.
Renta. Así le llamamos.
The gangs want to make as much money as they can without putting the drivers out of business. But in order to ensure people will pay them, they have to follow through on their threats sometimes.
¿Eso es tu casa?
Sí. I met a guy who experienced this firsthand, a cab driver. One day, about a year ago, he was out driving his cab when they came for him.
First, they tried to leave a cell phone with me. I didn't want to take it, but this girl gave it to me. And I put it to my ear, and they said, "We're calling from La Mafia."
La Mafia, translation, the Mafia, is a relatively new gang in Tegucigalpa.
And I said, "No, I don't have anything to talk to you about." And boom, I threw the phone back at the girl.
Then a week goes by, he's parking his cab, and he looks into the mirror and sees a tough-looking guy coming at him.
Y me pone la pistola en la cabeza. He puts the gun to my head.
The gun misfired twice, and the kid who tried to kill him ran away. The next day, this man who used to drive every day couldn't bear to get into his cab.
Yes, I stopped working. I stopped working for a while. Actually, I stopped working for life.
This is a part of why extortion is so bad for Honduras. Because on top of the terrible human toll, it's a major drag on the already weak economy. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to start a business or invest if the end result is you are going to be extorted and possibly killed. Over 200 taxi drivers have been murdered in the last 2 years. The government knows that extortion is a big problem and recently launched this special anti-extortion police force to deal with it. They arrested some people while I was there, and I went to check out the press conference. Police officers wearing face masks bring out three handcuffed extorters, and they are hardly fearsome gang kingpins. There's a 15-year-old boy, a 19-year-old woman. They were basically low-level couriers for the gangs. The taxi driver I talked to, the one staying at home, says he sees press conferences like these on TV all the time.
Look. The police always say that they got this guy and they got that guy. No. To me, that's just a facade. To give some hope to the people. But no, that's impossible.
Extorting buses and taxis has been so lucrative that recently the gangs have expanded into new areas. These days, everyone from the woman selling clothes in the market to the lawyers have to pay up. For NPR News, I'm Marlon Bishop.
It's called Smut. Give me smut and nothing but a dirty novel I can't shut if it's uncut and unsut. Tall. I've never quibbled if it was ribbled. I would devour where others merely nibbled. As the judge remarked the day that he acquitted my Aunt Hortense, to be smut it must be utterly without redeeming social importance. Pornographic pictures I adore. Indecent magazines galore. I like them more if they're hardcore. Bring on the obscene movies, murals, postcards, neckties, samplers, stained glass windows, tattoos, anything. More, I'm still not satisfied. Stories of tortures used by debauchers, lurid, licentious, and vile. Make me smile. Novels that pander to my taste for candor give me a pleasure sublime. Let's face it, I love slime. All books can be indecent books, though recent books are bolder. For filth, I'm glad to say, is in the mind of the beholder. When correctly viewed, everything is lewd. I could tell you things about Peter Pan and the Wizard of Oz. There's a dirty old man. Fanny Hill, and I suppose I always will, if it is swill and really filthy. Who needs a hobby like tennis or philately? I've got a hobby, rereading Lady Chatterley. But now they're trying to take it all away from us unless we take a stand, and hand in hand we fight for freedom of the press. In other words, smut, I love it. Ah, the adventures of a slut. Oh, I'm a market they can't glut. I don't know what compares with smut. Hip, hip, hooray, let's hear it for the Supreme Court. Don't let them take it away.
Coming up next, Elie Wiesel's Call for Justice. Nobel Peace Prize laureate Elie Wiesel has inspired generations to social action.
There is no greater honor for me than to be given the opportunity to be in the presence of a remarkable human being, our beloved friend Elie Wiesel, who by the grace of God survived the most horrific torture of the human body, mind, and soul, unable to speak of it for years, and in his years of silence, perhaps living the nightmare over and over again, to finally find the will and strength to break the silence, to become the voice, the father of 6 million men, women, and children who cannot speak for themselves ever again. Ladies and gentlemen, the recipient of this year's prestigious William O. Douglas Award, Elie Wiesel.
leaders and members of this marvelous organization, how can I really thank you? We sat, Marianne and I were sitting, and each moment brought a surprise. Believe me, we didn't expect that. We thought, well, it's going to be one more event with people here or there, eating well, talking a lot, and then a few words, okay. But really, we were surprised, and thank you for the surprise. Now, the work that you have done is impressive, and while I listened to your testimonies, more or less, I thought, what would the world have been if you had been there in 1938-39 with hundreds and thousands of men and women and children waiting for some gate to be open? I am sure it would have been a better world. And now, with all of these stories that I hear, what do they mean? Simply, I always believed, from the very beginning of my life, that God alone is alone. Human beings are not, and are not meant to be. We would not be who we are if we were closed and locked in our loneliness. It is because there is someone else, always someone else, that we can talk and listen and remember and bring life into this world. And of course I refer to my wife, Marion. Marion is to me more than many, many people know. It's true, I write books, but all the work that I have done, it's always with her. She is elegant, she's resolved, and always not only passionate, but clever, intelligent. She tells me what to do and what not to do, mainly what not to do. And in order to be honest, I must tell you, if I am here, it's because she said, I think this time you should go. I wouldn't have come. Forgive me, but I must tell you the truth, because usually, you know, we are so busy, both she and our foundation and I myself with my work teaching. I just ended the week, a great week, an inspiring week at Chapman University. And it would have been enough to go back to New York. In the meantime, we got, of course, noticed that I have to go to Washington, Boulevard. We have to go there because the president is going to make a statement at the museum, the Holocaust Museum, and he wanted me to introduce him. So we will do that. But yes, but at the same time, when I heard what you were doing, I was very pleased, because law is the basis of civilization. Law is a tower. Law is a gate. And we are all working in its shadow to bring more light and receive more light from law. Without it is perversion. Perversion out of nothingness. But worst of all, when law is corrupt, it is a disaster. You better than anyone else know that Germany began going down when it corrupted the law, when the law was no longer there to protect, but on the contrary, to imprison and to hurt and to kill. The law didn't change there then. The judicial system remained almost totally the same when Hitler came. It did not change. And maybe that's the reason why it went from darkness to darkness. I don't know. I don't know how a country or a nation or a family could survive intelligently, humanly, without the respect for the law. And therefore you, who actually use the law for extraordinarily moral reasons to help those who need help and to open the gates to those who need the gates to be opened. I speak to you as one who spent most of his life until I came here as a refugee and stateless. You don't know what it means to be stateless. They couldn't move without some document. Couldn't cross a border without the police asking, what are you going to do here? The day I got the American citizenship, I quickly went to the passport office. The first thing I did, to get a passport. I never had a passport. And therefore, I understand what you are doing, the importance of what you are doing to those who need passports, who need certainties, who need help. Nancy, friend, we have done so many things together in Congress thanks to you. But always, what we had in mind, of course, on my side, is to celebrate and glorify memory. And you, simply to bring America into a new awareness that without memory, it wouldn't work for America. And that's how, actually, we created a museum. And we created a National Day of Remembrance every year. I cannot tell you enough how proud I am to be American. We always speak about it, Marion and I. How proud we should be and how proud we are. And also, how proud we both are to be here with you tonight. I remember in my little town, we told the story that one morning, father and son got up early and went to either to the house of study or prayer. All of a sudden, the father saw a golden coin on the ground. So he said to his son, pick it up. He picked it up. And the father said, my son, you see, if you get up early, you find a coin. And the son said, but dad, the guy who lost it got up even earlier. But the main thing is, they gave up their sleep and went to study or teach. I believe this is what we must do, not to sleep well when people suffer anywhere in the world, not to sleep well when some are persecuted, not to sleep well when people are hungry all over here or there, not to sleep well when there are people sick and nobody is there to help them, not to sleep well when anyone somewhere needs you. You don't sleep well. And for this, really, much more than for anything else in the beginning, we are very grateful to you. Continue. Thank you.
Big business cares about little people. You're getting sleepy. Polar bears are overrated. You're getting sleepy. Fiscal responsibility demands that we ignore the cost of Bush's tax cuts and two wars. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake refreshed and vote Republican. Iran's a threat to peace, so we should bomb them. You're getting sleepy. Elizabeth Warren is too altruistic to be trusted. Sleepy. We called it the Pledge to America because we're simply dusting off the contract with America because that worked so well. And now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll awake confused and vote Republican. Mexicans are taking American jobs, which we could be outsourcing to Sri Lanka. Jesus loves America best. That's why he wrote the Bible in English. Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito hate judicial activism, and so they gave all the rights of personhood to Walmart. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, Republican. Ooh, I want to see Titanic too. I love watching the same disaster over and over. Louis Gohmert will protect us from terror babies, sleepy. Republicans gave us civil rights, so sleepy. Newt Gingrich should decide who can and cannot be married. Sarah Palin, bring on the rapture. Whatever happens outside my gate is not my problem. I vote Republican. The best social safety net is debtor's prison. So vote Republican. You can't wrap your head around the fact that the footprint of in-transition human capital demonstrates you lack the skill set and bandwidth needed to provide impactful throughput to effectively brand the current failure cascade in the knowledge economy space. And science is confusing. Now when I count to three and snap my fingers, you'll remember nothing. And vote Republican. You're getting sleepy. You're counting sheep and getting sheepy. Lullaby.
My bags were packed in the overhead bin. The guy sitting next to me flashed a grin. We buckled up and both got set to go. And then suddenly as we took off, that guy began to shake and cough. It worried me that he was in my road. I said, don't kiss me or smile at me. I wish you were a mile from me. Could we put you in the hold below? You brought TB on a jet plane, and it's a drug-resistant strain. How could they let you go? Your new daddy works for the CDC, and he said it's all right by me. Don't worry, go and have your wedding day. But nobody dreamed the gift you brung would get on board inside your lung, and TSA took my Purell away. So they'll frisk me and x-ray me, and now they'll want a biopsy. Next time that I take a plane, I'll know that it's safer to sit next to a bearded guy who lights his shoe. But run if it's his nose, he starts to blow.
Love is all you need. Love is all. Love is all you need. 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 Love is all you need.
That's all, folks.